ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Welcome everyone. Tonight's subject is japa, meditation. And in all the bhakti scriptures, including Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras, there's mention of the importance of controlling the mind. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, after being advised by Krishna to control his mind, said that it's very difficult to control, just like it's difficult to control the wind. It seems impossible sometimes. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that by suitable practice and by detachment, one can control the mind. And he also says in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be one's worst enemy or one's best friend. Therefore, it's incumbent upon those who are practicing yoga to learn how to control the mind. And that means there must be suitable practice. And there also must be a life of detachment. That doesn't mean that you have to immediately go out and sell your house and car. But it does mean that you have to see everything in the proper perspective, that Krishna, or God, is the Ishvara. Ishvara means the controller of everything and the owner of everything. I may temporarily control and own many things, but I don't permanently control and own them, because one way or another they'll slip out of my grasp. Thank you. So, there are many prescriptions in various scriptures for controlling the mind, and there are various processes of yoga which advise how one may control one's mind. For instance, in the Ashtanga yoga practice, Ashtanga yoga has various steps through which one comes to the point where one can control the mind, and it begins with cleaning up one's life. Because if you're a liar, or if you steal, then you won't be able to sit still, because you'll be agitated by your mind. You have to be ethical, and you have to be truthful. Persons who are not truthful are constantly thinking in their minds how to make up for the lies they've perpetrated, and so forth. And also, it's important to be pure in body, in one's daily habits, because what we eat and what we listen to and those we associate with have a direct effect on the state of our mind, because the mind is affected by association. And we are what we eat, not just in body, but also in mind and mood. And therefore, there's a lifestyle that goes with meditation. If one is serious about the process of meditation, one should adjust various parts of one's life to find a higher happiness. And this is what Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that there are various kinds of happiness. Only a fool is interested in the temporary happiness of eat, sleep, drink, and be merry, because as Krishna says, these have a beginning and an end. And actually, he says something even more profound. Yehi samsparshaja poka dukkha yonaya eva te agyantavantakonteya na teshu ramate buddhaha. That they are the wombs of unhappiness. That is, they refers to interactions, my interactions with the external senses for the sake of gaining some temporary happiness. It brings misery. And then he says in the Gita, Krishna that is, that a person who learns to find happiness inwardly and taste inward happiness can enjoy unlimited happiness and not temporary happiness. We have within us Actually, we are within us. We are the soul within the body, which is compared in the Bhagavad Gita to be a yantra or a machine or a car or a vehicle. Some places it's compared to a city with 9 gates. These openings in our body, which we identify with in various ways, there are all kinds of ways to decorate the ears and the eyes, and one may not stop to think that, oh, these are holes. They're openings. They're what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, they're gateways to the city, the whole body being a city, and the openings are the gates to that city. And through these gates, we take in various kinds of information. And there's a lot of information that comes in through the senses, and then it gets processed through the mind and sorted out through the intelligence. And then we act in various ways according to our belief system. And that has much to do with our conditioning by the three modes of material nature. One man's food is another man's poison. One person may see a situation as happy, another may see it as sad or cause for lamentation. So this is a big subject matter, but it is one that is important to cultivate on a regular basis for those who are interested in finding the higher happiness within themselves. And it can be achieved, it means this happiness, by reconnecting with Ishwar. Ishwar means the Supreme Controller. And we may think of the Supreme Controller as the one who's supplying our intelligence. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, Srila Prabhupada gives a description of the meditator who takes some time to introspect. And he says, even the common person can do this. It's not that you have to be a great yogi. Anyone can do this at any time. And that is introspect. Introspect. Spect means to see or look, and intro means within. So one can be introspective for a moment. Actually, it's hard to do that because we have so much external stimuli that it's hard sometimes to even sit for a moment and introspect and look within and see what's there, because the mind is constantly churning. And as soon as I sit down, the mind says, get up, you gotta go. You've got more to do. You forgot. If you don't write to Uncle Harry, he's never going to speak to you again. And I jump up and I write the email. Next thing I know, something else catches my eye on the screen. And then I go down that wormhole. And next thing I know, 3 hours later, the cauliflower is burning on the stove because I forgot to put it on there. We can become utterly distracted from moment to moment, and through a day's time, we can become distracted. Over a week's time, we can be completely distracted. Over a month's time, over a year, over 5 years, 10 years, a lifetime of distraction. And then at the end, what is the end? Actually, there is no end. There's no end for the self. Krishna defines the self as unburnable, unbreakable, undryable, uncleavable, and undying. However, we experience what we call death because I have many attachments to the various ideas and desires that are coming through my mental system, and I sit and watch them like I watch a movie and become attached to the characters in the movie. And when the hero is exalted, I become proud, and when the hero is victorious, I rejoice, and when he gets cancer and dies, then I begin to weep. And then the lights come on, and I realize, oh, it was just a movie. But still, I go through these emotions. And similarly, Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, check that, the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that there's a way in which we can see the difference. With a little bit of study, one can understand what happens when we're changing through the various bodies in this life, and at the end, when this body is useless, and we change this body and go to another body, what's actually happening. So for all these reasons, it's recommended that one learn to control the mind, because the mind will carry us to our next destination. A very famous verse that many of you already know from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, whatever you think of at the time of death, whatever your prevailing mood is, and wherever your consciousness is fixed, will help to determine your next life, your next situation, your next body. It's a science. It's not arbitrary. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna then recommends manmana pavamad bhakto, which means meditate on me, think of me. It's very difficult to think of something that's void, or to think of nothingness, or actually to simply look at a candle flame or something like that may be helpful for some time, but there's no reciprocation from a candle flame. And one can't stay in a void forever. The mind needs engagement. We used to do a skit at the Sunday programs back in the old days, and it was about a genie. A man rubs the bottle. Everyone know what a genie is? Did you ever see one? Usually they give you three wishes. I don't know. That used to really concern me as a kid, which three? It's like, I'll ask for three more. And no, you can't do that. My friends would. Anyway, somebody finds a bottle on the beach or something like that, rubs the bottle, and a genie comes out and says, I'll give you whatever you want. So the man finds the bottle in the skit, and he rubs the bottle, and the genie comes out and thanks him for saving him from his imprisonment in the bottle, and then he gives him his wishes, and then he says, now you have to engage me or I'll kill you. You have to keep me busy, you have to give me service always, otherwise I'm going to come and kill you. So he says, okay, go clean my whole house. And the genie comes back in about 1 minute and says, okay, it's done, because he's really powerful. And then he says, well, go clean the whole yard and fix my car. And then he comes back in about 2 minutes. And on, he keeps giving him these small tasks. And he said, wash all the windows in the city. And he comes back in 5 minutes. He says, engage me or I'll kill you. And he keeps thinking of bigger and bigger tasks for him to do. But the genie still comes back. And now he's beginning to panic. And then he finds a mantra card that devotee gives him. And it teaches about the Maha Mantra and chanting Hare Krishna. The genie comes back and he says, chant Hare Krishna and keep chanting. So then the genie becomes happy. And so the mind is like that. It keeps coming back and saying, engage me, engage me, engage me, engage me. And there are many things we can think of, many engagements, but they'll never be quite satisfactory. But interestingly enough, and this is a great marvel and something to think about while we're meditating, the sound of the mantra that we meditate on, which, by the way, is called the Maha Mantra. Man means mind, and tra means deliver. That's M-A-N is mind. M-A-N equals mind. And T-R-A, which is the second half of the word, it comes from a Sanskrit word which means to free or to deliver. So mantra means to free or deliver the mind. And to engage it, just like the genie, give it an engagement that will actually keep him busy, and ultimately he'll become happy. The mind will become satisfied, become the friend. So there are many things that one can fix one's mind on. In the Yoga Sutra, interestingly, in the whole process of Ashtanga, the author, Patanjali Muni, thousands of years ago, wrote that there's a shortcut to all these stages in meditation. Did you know this about the Yoga Sutra? It's very interesting. In the Yoga Sutra, at least two places, he says that the shortcut to all this Ashtanga practice is called Ishvara Pranidhan. So I mentioned the word Ishvara. So it's I-S-H-V-A-R-A, Ishvara. And Pranidhan means P-R-A-N-I, D-A-N-A, or D-H-A-N-A, Pranidhan. And that means to offer one's obeisance or offer oneself in supplication to Ishwar, who's within the heart. So he says, this is the real shortcut to yoga, to all this process of Ashtanga. If you just submit yourself to what we call the super soul. So in the bhakti scriptures it's described, there's the soul, we are a soul. Soul means a conscious, eternal living entity. But there's also a supreme soul, and we're simultaneously one and different. So the supreme soul is just like us in consciousness, but we are compared to a ray of sunshine, and the supreme soul is compared to the sun. So a sun ray, you can't say that it is the sun, but you can't also deny that it's the sun at the same time. When there's a ray of sun in the room, like there is against that back wall, just take a look, because it's really beautiful, actually. It's illuminating a very small portion of that picture. That's a sun ray. So someone may say, hey, look, the sun's on the wall. But if the actual sun was on the wall, we'd be incinerated quickly. But at the same time, it is the sun, and it's also not the sun. So simultaneously one and different. Our individual consciousness is simultaneously one and different from Ishvara, 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 who is the supreme soul. And in the purport I mentioned to you earlier, in the second chapter, the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada mentions that any common person, so that's not you, it applies to me, can experience Ishvara by being introspective. So meditation is introspection, and it's also a quest to meet Ishvara. Now, what does he describe? Srila Prabhupada describes as Ishvara. How can one understand that Ishvara is there? By intelligence, by the fact that we're getting intelligence. Where does intelligence come from? It's the form direction. Intelligence gives us direction when we don't know which way to go and what to do. And oftentimes, in difficult, sticky situations, we may pray to Ishvara and say, please save me. Have you ever done that? Anyone? You think everything's good, life's fine, everything, I got money in the bank, got a full tank of gas, I'm good. And then something happens, and then suddenly my mood changes. I say, please save me, God, please, just this one time. If you save me this one time, I'll be good from now on. Whatever it is, there's a tendency in the small consciousness, the living entity consciousness, to reach out to God. As I say, there's no atheists in foxholes, in the sense that as soon as one's in a very dangerous situation, it's natural to pray to God. But we can also understand how we're getting intelligence from a higher source. There are many instances, and we don't have to go to extreme instances to understand this, but I'll start with a couple in which people have reported, and I'll say scientists have reported, that working on a very difficult equation or problem for a long time and almost giving up, and then suddenly getting the answer completely, coming into a flow of their consciousness. There have been many instances like this documented. In fact, we may all have experienced something like this. And if one is introspective, one can see how one's getting guidance from within, from Ishvara. Even in ordinary dealings, intelligence. Some people might say, oh, something was telling me to pick up my keys, but I didn't listen. I left them there, and now I'm locked out of the house. That ever happened to anybody? Something like little things like that. You can see through the day there's guidance coming so that we can move forward. So by introspecting, we can come closer to that Ishvara. And interestingly, at least to me it is interesting, that the bhakti scriptures describe how Ishvara is sitting right next to us. In fact, the scriptures say that he's just like, we're like he and us. are like two birds in a tree. One bird is eating and trying to enjoy the fruits on the tree, and the other one's simply observing. And so he's right next to us all the time, closest thing to us, and supplying us intelligence and maintaining us, fulfilling our desires and so forth. But somehow or other, my attention has gone elsewhere. So now, the bhakti scriptures say, turn your attention around and find Ishvara. Find that person, that intelligent person who's sitting right next to you, who's all-powerful and all-merciful, and who's omniscient at the same time. That's the person you want to meet. And Krishna says in the Gita that if you meet this person, you come in contact with this person, who is Krishna himself, then you'll become peaceful, you'll become happy, and you'll feel satisfied. And you won't be distracted by the myriad desires and impulses that are coming through the mind. So there's a practice that one can perform in this age which directly connects one to Ishvara. You don't have to do it in a roundabout way, but it's meditation in the classical sense, and that is fixing one's mind on one point, which is the object of Ashtanga Yoga in the Yoga Sutra. And it's not easy. As I mentioned, there are various steps in Ashtanga, and it's very advanced to be able to fix the mind on one point, on one subject, in fact, even for a few seconds. Now, that may seem fantastical, but it's a fact. If you actually pay attention to where your mind's going, you'll see that it's hard to keep it in one place or on one subject for even a few seconds, what to speak of 5 seconds or 10 seconds. That's considered to be advanced. So fixing one's mind and practicing focus is very, very beneficial. To learn how to focus one's attention at one point and not let it just be carried here, there, and everywhere is very powerful. And at the same time, what we're talking about tonight is japa meditation. Now, japa is a traditional process of meditation which also includes prayer. And one performs it for oneself. And it involves the repetition of the mantra, which we already know what mantra means. Now, I'll just elaborate a little bit more on mantra. A mantra is a code, just like there's computer code that one might write, and it may reveal many things to you, the computer code. It's a special combination of ones and zeros, computer code, that performs certain functions. So the mantra is also a spiritual formula or code. And one of the great bhakti teachers, Rupa Goswami, says, Paramakshara Krite. The mantra which we've been prescribed, it comes from an ancient body of literature, it's called the Vedas. This mantra or code, spiritual formula, is called Param, P-A-R-A-M, Param, Aksharakrite, which means it's the supreme combination of syllables. So it's a supreme formula. So think of the mantra as a supreme combination of syllables. You know that syllables are useful in life, right? Because certain combinations can get people angry, certain combinations can make people give you what they want. You might have noticed that with your spouse or your boss or anybody else. Whoops, I gave the wrong combination of syllables. And now I'm fired. You know, there's a consequence for what we say and the combinations of words and syllables that we emit. And therefore, now we're in a different realm. And just philosophically, it's interesting, and this comes up in the bhakti scriptures. How is it that something which is generated by a tongue, which is made of water and other material elements, how can it make a spiritual sound? That's an interesting topic. But that's very deep, and we're not going to go into it tonight, but just to touch on it, there's a way in which Ishvara helps us, because actually he's the generator of all energies, and he can transform energies at any time. And he regulates how the energies are manifested. And therefore, when we're chanting the mantra in the right mood, in the right consciousness, then we actually touch the divine. We can personally touch the divine and directly touch the divine by repeating the spiritual formula, the spiritual combination of syllables. And in this case, the Maha Mantra, we heard what mantra means, and Maha means great. So it's the great mantra, it's an omnibus mantra. Everything's there within this mantra. And therefore, the Vedas say that you don't have to think that there's something else you have to do. Now, this is important for meditation. You have to get yourself into a situation where you understand, I don't have anything else to do right now. Because one of the tricks of the mind is to say you have something else to do. But you have to have faith in the mantra. And that's why I'm going to the trouble to with this preamble, to say that the mantra is a bona fide prescription given by authoritative spiritual sources. And therefore, you can believe in it. And if you don't fully believe in it, at least suspend disbelief temporarily. Give yourself at least a little time when you do the mantra and when you do your meditation to suspend disbelief. Can you have you all practiced doing that, suspending disbelief? So just put it on hold for a while. Prabhupada does this at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, you may not believe in Ishvara. You may not believe in God at all. But when you read the Bhagavad Gita, just for now, suspend your disbelief and just pretend like you do believe in God. You do believe there is a supreme controller, because then you'll be able to enter deeply within the Bhagavad Gita. So while you practice your meditation, your japa meditation, you have to suspend the disbelief of the mind. Just unhook it. Unhook that function of the mind which says, I have something else to do. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the great teachers of the bhakti system, said something very profound, which you can meditate on before you begin repeating the mantra and listening to it carefully. He said, there's nothing else to be had in the 14 worlds except this mantra. I'll say it, and please repeat. There's nothing else to be had in the 14 worlds except this mantra. So how does your mind feel about that? Any objections from the mind saying, yeah, but what about my car payment and all that stuff? Or what about that house in the country I want? I mean, the mind may have so many ideas and plans for what it wants, but this is part of suspending disbelief before you begin repeating the mantra. Put yourself in this neutral zone where you see, right now, I'm going to focus my attention on this spiritual formula with the idea that there's nothing else to be had. And at the same time, the bhakti scriptures say that you can get everything from this mantra. Everything that you've ever wanted, everything that your mind has ever asked you for, because it has a lot of demands, you can get through the mantra. So that'll help quiet them down for a little while. Because you can always tell your mind, look it, you tried everything else and it didn't work, right? You're already working three jobs and you're still broke, right? So now, just focus on this. Not that we're chanting the mantra to make money or anything like that. I'm saying from the point of view of suspending disbelief, suspending the mind. Because the mind has these demands. The meditators, you know, a little bit divorced from that. That's why I said in the beginning you have to have a suitable practice and detachment. And this helps to build detachment because the mind makes unreasonable demands. And so you can just tell it, whatever you wanted anyway, you're going to get from the mantra. So just be quiet for a while and let's try this. Okay, so that's a foundation on which one can properly chant the mantra with this suspended disbelief, and with an understanding that everything comes from the mantra anyway. And that it's a supreme combination of syllables, and that there's something in it for me. Because that's what everyone's looking for. What's in it for me? WIIFM. That's the radio station that everyone's dialed into. What's in it for me? So now, technically or mechanically, there are a few ideas. The mantra itself is 16 words and 24 syllables. So it's nice and symmetrical. It's very symmetrical. 32 syllables. 16 words, 32 syllables. And so you can get in a rhythm with chanting the mantra, and that's some place that your mind can keep coming back to. That's the place to meditate on when you're chanting the mantra. Now, japa is supposed to be just audible for yourself. And therefore, you'll say it just loud enough so that your own ears can hear it, not so that everyone else across the room can hear it. Although, when we do this in a minute and we chant together, you'll notice that you hear everybody else. And that's okay, too. But mostly concentrate on the sound that you're making. And the best way to concentrate on the sound you're making is to do it with a feeling of devotion or prayer, and to concentrate on the heart, a heartfelt. And that's not so hard because it's intuitive. As we mentioned before, when I'm in trouble, I naturally and intuitively reach out to the Supreme, even if I don't know who it is, and I say, please help me. And if, before chanting the mantra, I can realize my dependence, think about your breath, think how you're so dependent on your breath. I just got back from Houston this morning. I took a short nap, which lasted not very long, but when I lay down, I could feel my heart beating, and I was thinking, how's that going on? And how long's it going to go on? I have no idea, but I'm dependent. I don't have any say over it, really. And similarly, all the Just the vital functions of my body, I'm dependent on them. I take them for granted. But for a moment in my meditation, don't take them for granted. Realize they're coming as a gift. And I'm fully dependent on the Ishwar, to keep them running. He's giving me this opportunity. And so prayerfully calling out from the heart out of gratitude, out of a feeling of dependence, And in that gratitude and dependence, saying, please engage me in your service. And this is the essence of the meaning of the mantra, which we can say now. It's a Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama.
Hare Hare. So it means, O my Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. And when we look at the individual words of the mantra, Hare means the energy of the Lord, the internal potency. And Krishna means the all-attractive, the source of everything. And Rama means the highest spiritual happiness or pleasure that everyone's actually looking for. And really, if we just get in the mood of calling out to Ishwar, to the Supreme Controller who's there within the heart, and asking, please engage me in your service, please protect me, please save me, help me. If I call out like that, then it's natural that the mantra will come from the heart and we'll feel it in the heart. And this is a good way to concentrate on the mantra, to feel one's dependence and helplessness. And sometimes, we'll notice with a little baby, has no other recourse except to call out for the mother. and little baby is completely helpless. So if you envision yourself as a little baby, as an infant, and you're completely helpless on the support of Ishvara, and then when you chant the mantra, you call out, just like a baby calls out for its mother. So then a couple other things. Well, first let's chant a little bit, and then we'll go back and talk about a few other points, and we'll also have some discussion about the mantra as well. And so you can, for now, for tonight, as we're chanting the mantra in this japa, it's a good idea to feel yourself comfortable wherever you're sitting. So that, in fact, in the process of Ashtanga, this asana that's so popular nowadays everywhere, everyone's practicing asana. Asana means, everyone knows what asana means. These various poses, yogic postures, they make the body very supple. These are actually meant so that you can sit for longer periods of time in meditation without being disturbed. Because if you're uncomfortable, it's hard to sit for very long. You become restless and then you'll have to get up. Which is not the end of the world when you're doing mantra japa, because you can also stand up when you're chanting mantra japa, the Hare Krishna mantra. You can stand up, you can even pace, but be careful. And we'll go into that in a minute. Be careful not to let your attention just go wild and go all over the place. So what we'll do now, and the mantra is written on the screen for those of you who would like to use that as a point of meditation, to see the names on the screen and to repeat and bring your mind back to the mantra itself. So you can bring your mind back to the sound of the mantra as you repeat it, and you'll notice that every half second the mind will go away somewhere else. It will jump to Rio de Janeiro, and sorry I said that, because now it definitely will go there, and all other kinds of places. But you have to keep, your job is and to keep bringing it back. And one of the most commonly asked questions, people always say, but it's so hard, my mind, it's hard to control my mind. Yes, it is. That's agreed already. Arjuna said it. Everyone says it. That's why there's a process. So don't worry about it. Don't become concerned that your mind has gone away. But do note it. Do notice that the mind tends to wander or be what's called chanchal. Chanchal means restless and moving from here to there and going from one. And it's actually amusing in some ways. If you can be detached enough when you're chanting to be amused slightly at the fact that the mind is so restless, just like a child, sometimes if you're really attached, when a child comes in the room, then you'll just become frustrated because he or she will jump all over the place. But if you just observe, you know, their energy and how they're jumping around, and that it's interesting that at that time of life you can't sit still, then you'll be more objective and it'll be easier to actually concentrate on the task at hand. So see the mind also like a restless child when it runs away. Just be patient like a good parent and bring it back. And bring it back. You have some place to bring it. Bring it home to the mantra. Mantra is the root. It's where you're going to get everything. All things you ever wanted are, to achieve and experience and do, everything comes from the mantra. Our life comes from the mantra. Everything's in the mantra. And our perfection of life is to come to the stage of purely chanting the mantra, which means with the spirit of devotion, that please just let me serve you. So for a few minutes, just let yourself go into the mantra. Don't think about anything else. Everyone, there's a little switch at the back of your head. Just turn back there, switch it, turn it off. That's like when you get on the plane, they serve anything with an on-off switch, turn it off. So that's your little switch on your brain that says, I got to go, I got to, you know, that text is going to come in a minute that I, you know, I just won something or whatever it is. Turn it off. And if your cell phone goes off, if somebody's cell phone goes off, then just tolerate it and bring your mind back to the mantra, because I guarantee you somebody's cell phone will go off. And that's just the way the world is. There's a lot of distractions, so you have to practice not being distracted and bring your mind back to the mantra. So everyone take a nice deep breath and just relax on the exhale. And then for the first session, don't worry about time or how many, if some of you are chanting on beads, don't worry how far along you're getting. Lose yourself in the mantra. Let yourself go on this. Don't think, I got to make more progress. How come he's going so slow? Just be in the mantra and be happy, okay? And I'll take the responsibility for stopping at the end and let everybody know when that session's over, and then we can have some more discussion. So we'll chant in unison for the first session. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And now I'm going to read you a purport from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text number 35. Those of you who don't already have the Srimad Bhagavatam, just see me afterwards and we'll give you a set to take home. There's just some nominal fee, but you should have one in your home to read regularly. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized by our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Purport. The general argument of the common man is that since the Lord is not visible to our eyes, how can one either surrender unto him or render transcendental loving service unto him? To such a common man, here is a practical suggestion given by Srila Shukadeva Goswami as to how one can perceive the Supreme Lord by reason and perception. Actually, the Lord is not perceivable by our present materialized senses, but when one is convinced of the presence of the Lord by a practical service attitude, there is a revelation by the Lord's mercy, and such a pure devotee of the Lord can perceive the Lord's presence always and everywhere. He can perceive that intelligence is the form direction of the Paramatma plenary portion of the personality of Godhead. The presence of Paramatma in everyone's company is not very difficult to realize, even for the common man. The procedure is as follows. One can perceive one's self-identification and feel positively that he exists. He may not feel it very abruptly, but by using a little intelligence, he can feel that he is not the body. He can feel that the hand, the leg, the head, the hair, and the limbs are all his bodily parts and parcels. But as such, the hand, the leg, the head, etc., cannot be identified with his self. Therefore, just by using intelligence, he can distinguish and separate his self from other things that he sees. So the natural conclusion is that the living being, either man or beast, is the seer, and he sees besides himself all other things. So there is a difference between the seer and the seen. Now, by a little use of intelligence, we can also readily agree that the living being who sees the things beyond himself by ordinary vision has no power to see or to move independently. All our ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied to us by nature in various combinations. Our senses of perception and of action, that is to say, our five perceptive senses of 1, hearing, 2, touch, 3, sight, 4, taste, and 5, smell, as well as our five senses of action, namely 1, hands, 2, legs, 3, speech, 4, evacuation organs, and 5, reproductive organs, and also our three subtle senses, namely 1, mind, 2, intelligence, and 3, ego, 13 senses in all, are supplied to us by various arrangements of gross or subtle forms of natural energy. And it is equally evident that our objects of perception are nothing but the products of the inexhaustible permutations and combinations of the forms taken by natural energy. As this conclusively proves that the ordinary living being has no independent power of perception or of motion, and as we undoubtedly feel our existence being conditioned by nature's energy, we conclude that he who sees is spirit, and that the senses, as well as the objects of perception, are material. The spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. I repeat, the spiritual quality of the seer is manifest in our dissatisfaction with the limited state of materially conditioned existence. That is the difference between spirit and matter. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing. There are some less intelligent arguments that matter develops the power of seeing and moving as a certain organic development. But such an argument cannot be accepted because there is no experimental evidence that matter has ever anywhere produced a living entity. Trust no future, however pleasant. Idle talks regarding future development of matter into spirit are actually foolish because no matter has ever developed the power of seeing or moving in any part of the world. Therefore, it is definite that matter and spirit are two different identities, and this conclusion is arrived at by the use of intelligence. Now we come to the point that the things which are seen by a little use of intelligence cannot be animate unless we accept someone as the user of or director of the intelligence. Intelligence gives one direction, like some higher authority, and the living being cannot see or move or eat or do anything without the use of intelligence. When one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man, and so a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority, who is present and residing within every individual living being, is the super-self. At this point in our investigation, we may consider the following question. On the one hand, we realize that all our perceptions and activities are conditioned by arrangements of material nature, yet we also ordinarily feel and say, I am perceiving or I am doing. Therefore, we can say that our material senses of perception and action are moving because we are identifying the self with the material body, and that the superior principle of super-self is guiding and supplying us according to our desire. By taking advantage of the guidance of super-self in the form of intelligence, we can either continue to study and to put into practice our conclusion that I am not this body, or we can choose to remain in the false material identification, fancying ourselves to be the possessors and doers. Our freedom consists in orienting our desire either toward the ignorant material conception or the true spiritual conception. We can easily attain to the true spiritual conception by recognizing the super-self, Paramatma, to be our friend and guide, and by dovetailing our intelligence with the superior intelligence of Paramatma. The super-self and the individual self are both spirit, and therefore the super-self and the individual self are both qualitatively one and distinct from matter. But the super-self and the individual self cannot be on an equal level because the super-self gives direction or supplies intelligence, and the individual self follows the direction, and thus actions are performed properly. The individual is completely dependent on the direction of the super-self because in every step, the individual self follows the direction of the super-self in the matter of seeing, hearing, thinking, feeling, willing, etc. So far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super-spirit. Now, if we go to the Bhagavad Gita or to the Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit, and the super-spirit, are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The super-self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita affirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead dominates all over the material world by his partial representation only. God is great, and he cannot be simply an order supplier of the individual selves. Therefore, the super-self cannot be a full representation of the Supreme Self, Purushottam, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. Realization of the super-self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization, and by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally by the grace of the Lord. Keep that in mind as we go forward on the japa. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary conception of the Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting with another bird, as explained in the Upanishads, certainly the purport of the revealed information in the Vedas becomes clear to our vision, and there is no difficulty in realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. The intelligent man, therefore, after many births of such use of intelligence, surrenders himself at the lotus feet of Vasudeva, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7.19. And now, let's have about five reflections of what you just heard and how that might relate to your japa meditation. Yes, Sundarananda Prabhu. How many microphones do we have in the audience? So put one at the back, one in the middle, and one at the front. We have one at the front. Sundarananda's will be the middle one, and someone else take one for the back. So there's three altogether. Three areas.
Okay. Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes.
Just moments ago you were talking about how a child is utterly dependent on their parents and how to have that mood before our japa. Actually, it actually helps us to perform our japa in the proper mood and benefit from that. So I think that is something that I would like to apply that.
Good.
In
that's very practical. And okay, so four more reflections. Trisha.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I just heard after hearing that purport that Srila Prabhupada, I mean, was such a genius in the sense of, you know, so clearly defining the individual self and the spiritual supreme self. And what I found is that chanting is a process of first becoming realized of the first being the individual self and then the individual self connecting to the supreme self.
Okay. And Prabhupada mentioned, it says, matter, spirit, and super spirit. That's easy. Three points. This we can be aware of in our meditation, that we're calling out like a dependent child. Realize your dependence, then chant. Realize your dependence, then chant. And if you feel, Hare Krishna. And if you feel, if your mind's wandering, take shelter of this feeling of dependence. Keep coming back to that. And then remember that these energies, there's these energies that are being described, there's matter, and we're seeing matter, we're experiencing matter, but we're the experiencer, we're not the matter. And there's also, so we're spirit, and then there's super spirit. And we can realize super spirit because we're getting direction from super spirit, and we're being maintained by the super spirit. Thank you. Three more. Malini.
Prabhuji, when you're reading the purport, the point where you said that Paramatma is our only friend and guide. We were just discussing today that you may have to make different decisions in your life. You may consult your friends. But we were just thinking, if you go back to the holy name and think Paramatma is your only friend and guide, then that would make you more dependent on the holy name and take shelter of him more.
Very good. Thank you. Two more? And if there's any that come in by text, let us know also. Yes. Damodar Vamsi Dari Prabhu.
One thing was closing eyes and focusing on the sound helped better internalize things. Even keeping eyes open and though the form of Krishna was there in front, but it was slightly, the focus was not on the sound, but on the form. So it helped.
Good. I'm glad you brought up that point. I'll bring your attention to a verse which also may help focus your attention on your japa, which is from the first canto of the Bhagavatam, fifth chapter, and it's the second to the last verse. I can't remember how many verses are in that chapter, but this is the penultimate verse. And it says that the mantra is identical with the form of the Lord. Iti murtyabhidanena mantra murtim amurtikam yajite yagyapurusham sasam yag darshanapumam. And this verse is spoken by Narada Muni. And he says, and I'll tell you exactly what he says because we have the book right here. Thank you very much. It's text 38. Thus, he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who has no material form. So there's no material form of the Lord, but he has form. Don't mistake that he has no form. The Shastras don't say that he has no form. They say he has no material form. So there's a difference between material form and spiritual form. So here in the verse, iti murti abhidanina, the word murti, everyone who knows Hindi knows the word murti, right? Yes or yes? So yes, and so murti means form. But also, the Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that it also means difficulty. So here he says in the purport, amurtikam, the form of God is easily realized by the mantra. In other words, it's not difficult. It's amurtikam. It's not difficult to realize the form of God, the spiritual form of God, if you concentrate on the mantra. That's more impetus. So we have one more reflection, especially from the reading that we just did. Anything that you heard from the reading that brought your attention more to the japa? Yes, Vishakha Leela.
Prabhu, you were mentioning about the grace of God. I was actually thinking about it the entire week. For me, I was thinking to receive the grace of God, one has to be absorbed in the Lord. And one of the best ways to actually receive the grace of God is to chant attentively, absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, and actually to pray to Him to receive that grace.
Okay, that was another point we sort of stopped and looked at in the purport. To remember that everything's coming by grace. In other words, whatever realization you do get from your meditation, you can't force it. And we learn this lesson in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni sits down to meditate in a dense forest, and he has a profound realization. And he actually contacts the Supreme. He realizes his spiritual identity temporarily. And as we say metaphorically, he was swimming in ecstasy. But then he came back into his material body and was aware of his senses. And it was a painful experience, actually, coming back into this context of the body after experiencing freely. And then again he tried to get the experience, but he did it mechanically. And then Krishna actually spoke to him and said, you're not perfect yet, and you're trying to get it mechanically. It comes by grace. So this is an important point, that don't think that by mechanical meditation that you deserve something, or that you're going to climb a ladder and somehow achieve it in that way. But in bhakti meditation, we depend on grace. And grace means it comes by mercy. Mercy means I didn't deserve it. It came by somebody else's goodwill. And we're depending on super spirit for that. Gandharvika.
So Prabhuji, the word grace, if you go out, people who are not practicing bhakti, it's not a very positive thing, because they think that because you don't have confidence in you or qualifications and you're looking for some grace. So how or other philosophers criticize this, that depending upon grace is like because the realization of knowledge is not there, that's why one has to depend upon grace. So how do we understand this grace is ultimate thing that you have realized you are not complete?
It comes as an accumulation of intuitive wisdom. Because one may make a hard stand in this world and say, I'll figure it out myself. I will extract from this material nature all the answers. This is the approach of modern science. Not that I will be humble and pray for God. Who would want to do that? We're going back to the Dark Ages now, sir. Rather, by our own intelligence, I will extract from nature its secrets. I will force nature to give it up by my power of intelligence and use of resources. I'll wring it out of her. And ultimately, one can see that even as we go deeper into the secrets of the world, so to speak, through science, we become more and more knowledgeable about the minute details, but it remains elusive. A final conclusion remains elusive. In physics, there's an idea that we can explain everything through a common formula. But consciousness doesn't fit into that formula ever. And therefore, I'm speaking in the presence of Vrindavan Priya about physics. I feel embarrassed now. In any case, there's a way in which in many branches of science, they just simply write off consciousness as elusive or something that is not worth talking about. It's just an imaginatory thing. So those who are rigidly determined to not take grace and to figure it out by themselves, we'll have to do that for a little while until they become frustrated. Because, you know, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think. And people naturally feel grace, as I mentioned before, when someone feels helpless, they may then intuitively pray to God, even if they were professed rigid atheist previously. So it's not necessarily an intellectual point. And incidentally, in the attempt to use the scientific context to present Krishna consciousness, the idea was never exactly to convince those who are very determined atheists and scientists in a certain way, but to reach the masses of innocent people who are affected by the dogma that's passed down through very scientific process. Not that science doesn't have great application, it does, but there's a way in which when one filters out certain kinds of evidence and tries to bring the mass of people to a conclusion that there's no spirit, there's only matter, and that spirit arises from matter and so forth, then there's a need to help those people understand that there are other processes to understand the higher truths of life. That was a long answer. The short answer is that people are either naturally inclined or they're not, and then some people are in the middle, and it's an art to know the difference between them. So now we're going to have another japa session, because the application of this chanting is something that you can do for yourself at any time, at any place. And it is one of the necessary elements for advancing in bhakti. So now we'll chant not in unison, but at varied speed. Go at your own speed. So just like when the traffic light, when you come traffic light at the freeway entrance at rush hour and one light goes off and the other light, half of you on this room will start and then the other half will start the other hand and will be desynchronized. I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up. And we'll chant for a few more minutes and then we're going to have time just for a few other realizations or questions about chanting. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, so from this section over, then just start chanting at your own speed. And I'll stop you, so just lose yourself in the chanting. Think for about 30 seconds, actually, we're going to start. Fix your mind on some of these ideas that we just talked about. That is, waiting for grace to descend, depending on the super spirit for the intelligence. And then start chanting. So we'll just be quiet for a few seconds so you can center yourself and think of how you're not the body and how we're dependent on super spirit. Okay, the right side, the left side of the room, just start chanting at your own speed, softly to yourself. And now the right side of the room, please start chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is the way to raise the consciousness, because Krishna, the super spirit, and his name are the same. And by proximity and through opening the heart in prayer by chanting japa, one will solve all one's problems in life. Because all problems arise from the level of consciousness and are solved by improving the consciousness. And this method of repeating the names of the Supreme is the primary way mentioned in the Vedas and the Bhakti scriptures, which are part of the Vedas, for purifying, cleansing, and elevating the consciousness. So one can do this in a focused way. As I mentioned earlier, focusing the mind on one point is very beneficial in many ways.
the mind is the center of all the senses. And if the mind feels some satisfaction through focus and by hearing the mantra, then all the other senses will follow. And there's a way in which we'll be more peaceful throughout the day. And we'll also, through our realization of Ishvara, the fact that there's a superior intelligence, and also feeling myself to be helpless, and will also instill in us a sense of peace. Because much of our angst comes from feeling that I have to fix the problems of the world, and I'm not able to do that. I'm not even able to fix my own problems. It's very difficult. So taking shelter of the super spirit of Ishvara, of Krishna, through chanting the name is a highly recommended method for daily bringing the consciousness to the higher level. And here's a couple practical tips. If you start a home practice for this, it's very beneficial. So there are a few things that you can do for your home practice. One is to create a sacred space in your house. And if you just make a seat, and Krishna recommends this in the Bhagavad Gita for those who are meditating, get yourself a seat that's not too high or too low. Like the one I'm sitting on right now, it's not too high and it's not too low. It's just about right for me, I think. And I feel comfortable in this seat. If you sit in a seat and it's too high, or you're uncomfortable, so get yourself a seat at home. It helps to have, you can go to online and you can get a zafu, like the ones we sit on here. They're a little bit dilapidated, the ones we have, because we've been sitting on them for a while. But generally, they're supposed to be a little plump. They're meditation cushions. And if you sit and you have your hips above your knees, then you can generally keep your back straight and you can sit more comfortably for a longer period of time. So whatever you have to do, find yourself a seat and find a place in your home where you can sit without being distracted. If someone's using electronic equipment or other noises are coming into the place, it may be difficult. So it's beneficial to just create a space, because even the act of doing that will make you more focused in your japa, because you're doing it purposefully, creating a space for yourself and a comfortable seat. And then we have what we call the three P's for a meditation, which are posture. So posture is important, and you can experiment with this tomorrow if you like. I was just doing it over the weekend. I was just in Houston, and in the morning we'd sit in the temple room like this, and we'd chant our japa together with a number of devotees. And I was experimenting. I was noticing, because sometimes devotees rock like this when they're chanting. So this is kind of a natural thing to rock, but try not rocking. Try sitting perfectly still and see what happens. And you'll notice that you can actually fine-tune your meditation. If you sit perfectly still and don't move, just chant the mantra, but don't rock one way or the other, and don't fidget, don't move your feet and things like that. You may not be able to do it for long if you're not practiced at it, but see what it does for your consciousness and your state of concentration. It's very interesting what happens, the difference between rocking and being steady. And if your posture, if your spine is straight, there's a way in which you tend to be, it alerts your whole system and you tend to be more focused. If you're slouching or something like that, then it sort of sends a signal to your whole system that now it's time to slack off and do whatever, go wherever you want. I'm just relaxing now. There's certain postures. And there's a yogic posture where your spine is straight, and it tends to help you to stay at attention. So this meditation means to keep your attention focused in one place. It'll make you a better person and more proficient in all the other areas of your life as well. Just this little bit of practice every day of focusing and your attention. And then, so posture is important. And then there's prayer. So when you chant prayerfully, and remember that this is mantra, it's not a It's not a mechanical thing. It's actually a prayer. They're names of God. And if you remember that, that this is connecting you directly to the super spirit, because there's no difference between Ishvara and his name. And keep bringing your mind back to that. And remember, you're directly connecting. I am directly connecting by chanting this name. And prayerfully chant out the name. Then this is very practical. And the third P is pronunciation. And I would urge you to do a little bit of homework and turn on your iPhone or whatever recording device you have when you sit down to do your japa chanting and record yourself chanting, because you may be surprised what you hear. Because oftentimes we can get in a habit and we think we're chanting a certain thing or certain syllables. And then when you listen to it, you might hear something else. You may hear that you're missing a mantra or a syllable or some part of the mantra, or you're missing a syllable or something like that. And professionals do this all the time. Like people who are professional speakers, they watch themselves. They listen to their lectures over and over again. And professional athletes, they'll watch themselves so they can prove it every week. And oh, I did this, I did that. They're careful. They watch it. So with your japa, try that also. It'll make you more aware of what you're doing and how you're doing it. And your pronunciation, how you speak the syllables, is important. It will make you more focused if you're actually just remembering to say all the syllables in the mantra as you say it. It'll actually bring your mind closer to the mantra. So what are the three P's? First one is? Posture. Yeah, and they're not necessarily in that order. There's not any order of importance necessarily. But if they were, I would say prayer is the most important. Because even if you don't have the pronunciation right, if you're really praying, then it'll have the most effect. This is a mini workshop, so we've covered a few things. And we have something from Srivas Pandit Prabhu. Yes.
So, Prabhuji, some devotees hold the bead bags to their chest and somebody holds it onto their knee levels. Is there any recommendation which one is better than other?
Let me just reiterate what you're saying and try to give a demonstration for those who might not have been sure. I don't know what that means. This is a bead bag. And inside there's a rosary-like... practically every culture has one of these, because souls are in every culture and they have a tendency to pray to God and they want to focus and concentrate on it, so they make these things. So there's 108 beads on here. It's an auspicious number. It relates to many different aspects of... I won't go into that right now. But there's 108 beads, and one chants with the thumb and the middle finger by rolling each bead. And on each bead, one chants one mantra, like this. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then one would move to the next bead and chant the next mantra. And you start, you'll notice, and most beads, in a good set of beads, there's a large end and a small end, and the sizes graduate from large to small. And you start on the large end and go to the small end. And you can think of it like climbing a tree. It's fat at the bottom, and then you climb up to the top, get the fruit, and come back down. So you can keep going back and forth. And then on the bead, along with the beads, there's another counting device. These are called counter beads. And the counter beads... there's 16 on one string and then 4 on the other. So devotees, in order to keep steady in their practice of this kind of meditation, each day they will do a certain number, a fixed number of what we call rounds. And a round means going 108 mantras around the beads. That's one round. So there's 108 beads. You chant one mantra on each bead and go all the way around. That's called one round. If you go back the other way, which you do, you turn around, go in, you go back to the other side, two rounds. So some devotees make a you know, a set, they take a set number of rounds and they chant those every day. And they keep those beads in a bead bag. Like this. I feel like Martha Stewart or something. Okay, so now there's a big hole on the side you can put your hand in. And for me, I need a really big hole. And then on the other side, there's a small hole for your index finger because the index finger is considered to be like an inauspicious finger. It's meant for cursing and things like that. So it doesn't get to hang out in the bead bag with the other fingers while it's chanting. It can, you know, stay outside. So that's why you'll see people walking around like this. And George Harrison, when he used to chant japa around in his studio and stuff, people, because sometimes devotees chant like this. They would come up and say, "What happened to your hand? Hey, did you break your arm?" No. And chanting God's names. I have it on here. So Srivas Pandit Prabhu was saying that it seems as if devotees have their own techniques. Some devotees, when they're sitting chanting, they'll hold the bead bag here, and some will, you know, hold it here, some will hold it here, and so forth. These are all okay. It's one personal preference at what helps you concentrate the most. And, you know, different devotees have various ways of doing that so that they can feel like they're praying more fervently as they're going forward. And sometimes holding your hand to your heart, it reminds you to chant from your heart, and so forth. Only thing you shouldn't do is if you're standing up, and this is something I didn't go into, sometimes you may not be able to sit for long periods of time, but I'll just demonstrate by standing up for a second. Thank you. No, I got it. So if you feel tired from sitting for some time, then you can pace and chant. And it's best to pace kind of slowly and keep your focus on the mantra. Don't look around the room, go over to your computer screen, punch in Facebook, and then, you know, come back and things like that. Because the mind will catch on certain things. You know, if you look around the room but try to stay focused, even just stand up for the sake of, you know, getting the blood flow going. So, you know, you may sit for a while and you may feel successful chanting for a while, and then for some reason the mind just won't cooperate anymore. So that you may want to stand up and then just pace just a little bit and chant the mantra. So you can hold the bead bag here, but don't hold it here, because I'm not going to go into details, but sometimes devotees do this and they'll put their hands behind their back like this. Don't do that. Are there any other questions?
Prabhuji, what could be the cause for, on days there is a total lack of enthusiasm, it looks like a chore, and mind is besotted with doubts like, hey, is this working at all?
Well, there's a couple of things you can do. One is find some other devotees who are chanting and sit with them, because just like with any other activity, for instance, if you exercise, at first, you know, around the first of the year, it sounds like a great idea. And then around February 1st, most health clubs' attendance starts dropping off really quickly, because that's just the way the mind works. But if you go to, for instance, a place where other people are exercising, you'll see their enthusiasm, you'll pick up on it. And similarly, if you go and you chant with others, if you make an appointment to chant with other people who are enthusiastic about chanting, you'll be able to share their enthusiasm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends this in his book called the Harinam Chintamani. He says, do whatever you have to do to get in a situation where you can chant. And so he recommends trying various places also. You can go in a quieter place, like a, you know, an enclosure, and close the door, and things like that. And also, it helps to study the mantra. This is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Krishna himself to Uddhava. If you do a little research about the mantra before you chant it, then your mind will be more interested in it. Because generally the reason the mind runs off is it thinks, there's nothing in this for me. What have you done for me lately? Let's go to 7-Eleven and get a Slurpee. You know, it's just the mind wants something now. And if you study the mantra, for instance, there are verses that I mentioned earlier, like Nama Chintamani Krishnas, that this mantra talks about how the name is like touchstone. It's transformative. It's Krishna himself. It fulfills all desires, things like that. Then if that's fresh in your mind when you chant, you'll be more interested in the mantra. So you can study the mantra and become more interested in it. So you may need a variety of kinds of medication or techniques in order to keep coming back to the mantra. You may do it in a certain way for some time, and then that may stop working for you. So you may have to do some other way to stay current. But the main thing is that you should go on chanting the mantra, because after a while you will develop taste for the mantra. And one thing I've recommended consistently over many years is that you should try to get something every day. Don't go away empty-handed. When you sit down to chant your japa, go with the mood that, although I'm not doing this mechanically, pray for the mercy, for the grace to descend. And be very determined that today, even if I get a mustard seed of inspiration from this mantra, that's all you need. Your heart will be flooded with a realization just by one tiny mustard seed of mercy that comes from the chanting. And from that, you'll be able to fully control your senses, one mustard seed of realization. And from that, you'll be able to interact with others with compassion. You'll have a greater sense of a detachment from all things that are detrimental. They just won't be as interesting to you. You'll have strength. These things come naturally from the mantra, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, that you get jnana and vairagya by this direct contact with the name. You don't even know how it's happening. And interestingly, you may chant your prescribed number of rounds, and then and throughout the exercise, you may feel that you're not getting anything. And then you may walk away, and then later on you may realize, oh, I did get something. Because you always get something. And so this is another actual technique that's mentioned in the Shastra, is that you should continuously chant. If you're not feeling the effect from chanting a prescribed number of rounds, then try chanting without stoppage. In other words, don't stop chanting at all. Keep chanting all day long. That's the best option, actually. Because then you'll overcome the mind and whatever the lethargy was there. And there are persistent obstacles to the practice of bhakti. I'll finish with this because we have some other exciting ways of practicing bhakti coming up in a couple of minutes. But there are some obstacles you should know are there. When we talk about the mantra, we talk about grace and happiness and satisfaction and bliss, but you may sit down and think, oh, my leg hurts, and I'm really angry today because, you know, someone stole my car or something, and it's very difficult to overcome. Yes, it is, and we mentioned this at the beginning, that it's a high hill to climb to overcome the mind. But it can be done with practice and with detachment. And so you have to go on with the practice on a regular daily basis. I think I was on another track, and then I just... What? Okay. So try a home practice. If you don't have one already, develop a home practice, and it doesn't take that much. If you haven't started a home practice of japa, there's a few things that you can do. One is you can get yourself a set of these beads in a bead bag. We provide these here for someone. You can get these beads, and the person who sells them to you can give you another refresher course about how to chant on them. You don't have to have beads to start. Just make a little notation to yourself to start tomorrow if you can, and carve out a time when you can sit down and then do the mantra. And if you can spare 5 minutes, that'll be good. That's a good starting point. 5 minutes. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, thanks. Quick question. I don't always ask this of meditation teachers. I do have a home practice, as we mentioned earlier, as not regular as should be. I do have a room, a yoga room in my house that I go in there and I have murtis and all that. But my meditation mostly been quiet, no chantings involved. Either sit still and breathe, vipassana type of thing.
Yeah.
I do fall asleep a lot. And even when I try to do some mantra, like I'm using the Durga, Ma Durga mantra right now, because mm-hmm. I've been told as one of my archetypes. Mm-hmm. But even chanting, sometimes I get lost in the words. My mind go to sleep. Mm-hmm. How do we prevent that? How do we get around to... Obviously, I need sleep. Otherwise, I wouldn't be... But how do I stay awake and focus?
You just brought me back to the track. I was going to mention these five obstacles. Thank you. That was convenient. Well, how to stay awake when chanting? This is a great science. One thing is go to bed on time. Because if you're fresh when you wake up in the morning, especially if you chant in the morning, it's a good time to chant early in the morning before the sun comes up. And if you get enough rest the night before, that's helpful. And also if you don't eat a lot or don't eat anything the night before, because if you're digesting while you're in the morning, your stomach is full at night and then you wake up in the morning and there's still digestive process going on, it tends to drain the blood out of your brain, and there's a way in which you can become distracted by that. And it's also helpful to chant, as I mentioned before, in the association of others. So if you're by yourself, it may be a little more challenging until you get really good at it. And sometimes it helps also to fix your mind on the written mantra. You can look at the mantra and follow along with that. Those are a few ideas. But it is one of the obstacles. There's sleep is a persistent obstacle to chanting. It's one of the obstacles mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, where he says sleep, and so it's laya, which means sleep, and vishepa, which means distraction. The tendency for the mind to dart off in another direction, where you're doing something and it just takes off and says, I'll do that now. So this is distraction. It just gets pulled away to other things. So this is a persistent obstacle. And then there's what's called a pratipati, which means when sleep and distraction are not present, you just don't feel like doing it anyway. There's no real cause for distraction, and you're not even tired, but you just go, meh. This is called the pratipati, indifference to the practice itself. It's an obstacle. And then there's what's called kshaya, which means there are innate tendencies that are wound up in our subtle body, like anger, lust, greed. And these surface sometimes. And until we're purified, they'll have an influence over us and pull us away from the chanting. And the last one is called rasavada. And it means a taste for material things, material sense objects that call to you while you're chanting. Say, there's, a gallon of ice cream in the refrigerator, whatever it is. And it's like, why don't you go do that now instead of chanting? Or and other kinds of, sense stimuli. These are definite obstacles, but they can be overcome through the process of bhakti. And it's a gradual process, and they will be cleansed from one's consciousness and purified as one continues the chanting. So we recommend practice the Maha Mantra, even if you're doing some other mantra or breathing process or whatever, add this to your practice, the Maha Mantra, because it's called Maha Mantra, it's in the Vedas, it's prescribed, you'll do well with this mantra. So add it to your practice, and try some of the three P's, the pronunciation, and read up a little bit on the mantra. There's things that you can read in various places. We have whole books about the mantra that you can study and so forth. And if you try a variety of approaches, you'll find that you can steady yourself. You make it sort of a focused career choice that you're going to chant on a regular basis. And you'll notice that all the other parts of your life will improve and change. You'll become a happier person. You'll feel more detached. You'll, in circumstances when you need to be detached, that will be at your beck and call, that sort of detachment. And you'll feel a natural happiness that comes from associating with Krishna in the mantra. Actually, interesting, in the Upanishads said, in very deep sleep, we have a connection with the super spirit. And that's why when we wake up, we're refreshed. What to speak of directly chanting the the mantra where we're connecting. You will feel spiritually refreshed. Otherwise, our energy gets drained by many different kinds of sound vibration and images that we see, people we have to associate with, and the thoughts that come into our mind. So we need this on a regular daily basis as a tonic. And it's a kind of medicine that will cure the disease. And after some time, it becomes the food that actually sustains us. So this concludes today's mini workshop on the chanting of the Maha Mantra. So good luck, everyone, with your chanting. Go on with great courage, because you will be successful. There's no doubt about it. If you continue chanting the mantra and studying a little bit about it and practicing a few of these small techniques, you'll get your own realization and momentum, and everything good will come from this chanting. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Go up, Premanande, everybody. Thank you. And now we're going to have another kind of chanting, which is called Sankirtan, where we get to stand up, and we'll have the whole room available to us for dancing. And we're going to dance, and we're going to sing the mantra out loud. Hare Krishna. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.